It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. So, love. We talk about it a lot. Singers sing about it. Religions, philosophies try to define it. Author Anne Lamott has been thinking about love. In her newest book, she asks, what are we even talking about when we talk about love? What is it? Anne Lamott joins us now. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What does love mean to you? How does love show up in your life? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Anne Lamott is a novelist and nonfiction writer. She's an activist, public speaker, writing teacher. Her many books include Dusk, Night, Dawn on Revival and Courage. Her newest is called Somehow, Thoughts on Love. Annie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
You start your book, Annie, with almost a sermon on love, what it is, how we live it in our lives. Talk us through what walked you down that path of figuring out what the heck love is.
Well, it all began about 5 years ago when the UN climate papers came out that said we had 12 years to turn around the catastrophe, the global catastrophe. And of course, we hadn't done anything. So a couple of years ago, I started thinking about what the future was going to be like for my son, Sam, and his son, who's in high school now, named Jax. And I decided to write a book about everything that had ever helped me before to come through really dark, cold, scary times. And about three pieces in, I discovered that all of them had somehow or other to do with love, like this energy, community love, or not the love of nature, the family love, which can be a little fraught, but also very sweet. And every piece had to do with love. So I suddenly found myself writing a book on love that I really wanted to leave behind for the two of them for when I'm gone, because I think their futures are going to be a little rough. So anyway, I asked this six-year-old boy in my Sunday school, I said, what do you think love is? And I said, oh, you know, it's this stuff. And I thought, that's right. It's this stuff. You know, it's affection. It's kindness. It's generosity. It's peace. It's sharing. It's quiet. It's all sorts of different things. It's ecstatic dancing in the park. It's romantic. It's the love of activists. It's the love of the community that's picking up litter on our beaches. It's the neighbor who used to not like me until, I think I told this story in the book. I'm old now. I turned 70 2 days ago.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I left the engine of my car running, and she'd always been very weird and cold with me. And about 3 hours later, she knocked on my door and said, you know, your engine's running. And I had to make it seem like I had meant for that to be. But I think she knew then that I'm not a scary person, anything but, and she's been really sweet and friendly to me ever since. She waves me down, flags me down, asks how I am. So love does not always look so lovely. But it's always our only hope.
We think sometimes of love as this grand, immersive, focused feeling on one person. You talk about finding love on a 10-minute walk in a small act of kindness. How can we lead with love in those small ways?
Well, it's a line of my husband's that everything that is true and beautiful can be found on a 10-minute walk. And so for me, a lot of the time when I'm not feeling love, and I think the world is dying of not love, usually at the hands of the fundamentalists of every single persuasion, except possibly the Buddhists. But we're sitting inside, and I'm sure you're fine, but I'm thinking of whose fault things are and who to blame. And I'm feeling this sort of victimized self-righteousness, which is the exact opposite of that feeling in your heart of warmth and kind of a quiet gratitude. And so I often take these 10-minute walks with my dog, and it's like hitting the reset button. I see the neighbor. I see 93-year-old Jesse, who's still taking his daily walk because people come by to help him. And I'm seeing the people whose dog is about 14 and who come to talk to me because my dog passed last year and they don't think they're going to be able to handle it emotionally. And I make time for them. And that's love. And the community is love. You know, the people that are fighting to provide housing for the elderly in my community and for the unhoused in my community and who are mentoring. It's just there if you decide to get out of the shutdown, sort of victimized self-righteousness, which is a condition I tend to gravitate towards.
Well, and I was thinking that too, Anne. In my self-conception, I'm not a petty or vindictive or judgmental person, and I would want to live that way, but my brain doesn't always get that memo. How can we get from that place of whatever our personal failings are that steer us away from love? How do you get yourself back onto that path?
Onto that path. Well, I know, I think I said about 10 times in the book, if you want to have loving feelings, which is what heaven is like, you have to do loving things. You have to pick up the phone and call your very strange but very lonely aunt and stay on the phone with her when she goes into full tilt weird. And you take things by. In Texas, they have this thing called porch presents that are just wrapped in newspaper and usually left anonymously on someone's porch who might be having a really low point. It's just a porch present. Even if it's not anonymous, you don't need to write a thank you letter because it's a porch present wrapped in newspaper. And that's an act of love. And if you do these things, it will change your whole day around. It's this magical equation, but it works. And also you get outside and you look up. You look away from your feet. You look away from all the things that are so annoying, and you look up. You look up. You don't look up and see the stars and go, "Oh, those are medium stars, whatever." Or as the young people say, "Whatever." And you don't look at the new baby moon and go, "Well, yeah, it's fine. I mean, I guess I prefer the full moon," because then you're apt to look at the full moon and go, "Oh, I wish it weren't so cloudy today," right? Instead, you look up and you go, "Wow," and you look up at the stars and you say, "Wow." My pastor told me years ago that you can trap bees on the bottom of mason jars without lids because they just walk around sort of bitterly bumping into the glass when all they have to do is to look up. So I have a bunch of these tools, these kind of homely, ordinary tools in my battered old toolbox of 70 years. And I do them. Sometimes to get back to the path of love, I pick up the 200-pound phone and I call one of two or three best friends and I say, "I am not okay. I hate everything and I'm scared to death." And they don't ever say, "Really, geez, you've written all these spiritual books and you pretend to be this way or that." They inevitably say, "Oh, I'm so glad you called. I was there yesterday. I hated everyone and all of life. Let me come get you. Let's go to Target." And that's what love looks like.
Anne Lamott is with us. We're talking about her latest book. It's called Somehow, Thoughts on Love. Annie, I want to talk more about reaching out and community building. You have this great story. You were part of a church group. People are going to get together and figure out a big thing to do together. And they at first argued over what that big thing is. Can you talk us through that story and how people ended up?
Yeah, it's actually my friend Mark Iaconelli told me that his church group, the minister, who was a gay woman and an activist, just a beautiful soul, decided to start a church group of the radical Jesus. Well, that means, you know, there's this brown-skinned Jewish guy from the Middle East, and his message is take care of the poor. And so she summons people together, and a bunch of people show up. And she says, "What ideas do you have?" "Well, they're going to change the world. You know, they're going to do this. They're going to build showers for the homeless. And they're going to shut down the local right-wing radio station. And they're going to do 1,000 things." But they're all kind of getting worked up. You know, they're all like really uptight and saying this and that. And she says, "Oh, my God, you're just making me all so tired. I wish I hadn't started this group." And then one person said, she says, "Let's all go home and pray about it for a week. Meet me back here in a week." Well, about half the people come the following week and they start in again. "Well, I think we should do this." And of course, they all have an idea of who should be the leader of the group. And one of them says, why don't we talk about what the radical Jesus would look for each of us in our problems and our loneliness and our stuckness? And so then they came back the following week and one woman said, "Well, I'm really overweight and I won't walk, but I wonder if anybody in the group would walk with me several times a week." "Sure." A few hands go up. One woman said, I used to love having people over for dinner, and then I spaced out when I had people over last time, and I gave them food that they had told me made them sick. They were gluten free, and now I'm afraid. I wonder if anybody would come for dinner. Oh, well, all hands went up. And then my friend Mark Iaconelli said, "I just am so unconnected. I'm so busy. I have this toxic busyness and this toxic self-consciousness, and I just want a half an hour outside on the porch in quiet time and maybe prayer." And so then the minister said, "Oh, I'll come over. I'll take you, you know." So every time she called, he'd go, No, I'm too busy. Please don't come over. I'm just kind of not well enough for you to come over." To say, "Mark, I'm coming over. You don't have to meet me on the porch, but I'll be there." So there's a lot of stuff about community in this book, because you don't become fully human on your own. You don't sing harmony by yourself. You know, and it's scary for some of us that are shy or introverts, or to take that first step and to open a door where there's a group of people doing what you have longed to be a part of, whether it's singing, whether it's a choir, whether it's ecstatic dance, whether it's being a activist for women's rights, and you step in and you gasp, with horror. And you either think these people are just too odd for words, or something wrong with them, or you think what Groucho Marx always said, that he wouldn't want to belong to a group that would have him. And then you do this weird, scary, radical thing. You put out your hand and you say hello to someone. And a lot of life's richness begins with putting out your hand or looking someone in the eye and saying hello.
We are talking about love with Anne Lamott, novelist, nonfiction writer, and Sunday school teacher. Her new book is called Somehow, Thoughts on Love. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest? What thoughts do you have on love and how it works in your life? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with author, activist, and teacher Anne Lamott, looking at her new book. It's called Somehow, Thoughts on Love. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls. Laura is with us in Twin Lakes. Laura, hi.
Hello. Many, many, many years ago, I picked up a book called The Art of Loving by Eric Fromm. It was originally published in 1956. And I read this book, and this book, I believe, changed my life. Basically, the answer to human so the theory of love he's got in here, love is the answer to the problem of human existence. So basically, it's the separateness that we feel. And when we bridge that separateness, that's when we find love. And it could be love with anything, inanimate objects, with God, however you perceive him to be, with everything. Once we get that separateness away and we feel one with that, that's where love comes in. And it's a beautiful feeling once you experience it.
Laura, thanks a lot for the call. I think I hear you nodding along, Anne.
Yep, I'm nodding along.
It seems, though, that a lot of times the way our society is trending, we have more and more solitary pastimes, less likely to go out and join that community. How do we turn that around and get that connection that Laura is talking about?
Well, first of all, I think that we start to learn not love by kindergarten, and we discover that loving and sharing and compassion and just loving eyes on the world, you don't get graded for. And that what you get graded for is kind of thrusting yourself ahead of the pack and raising your numbers and thinking that it's outside there, and that if you're a value to other people, then you will get love. It's transactional. That's how I was raised anyway. And for me, a lot of this began when I got sober, and horribly people said that I needed to learn somehow to start learning my loving my very, very disappointing self as best I could. I had to talk to me the way I talked to you. Now, I don't think we've ever met in person, although I've been on this show a few times. But if you told me something like, "Oh, you just feel hopeless about the future or about democracy," I wouldn't say, "Really? You're kidding me. Like, how old are you? You know, I would say, God, I know how that feels. I'm not there today, but I was actually there Monday. And what I did was I read Arlie Hochschild's book on finding love and connection with the people of MAGA in the bayou, you know, this sociologist from Berkeley, or a stranger in their own land, it's called. Oh, I read a bunch of poetry. I went outside. I took a 10-minute walk. I looked up. And you know what I did? I did a bunch of things that I think will contribute to the common good. Now, I grew up in the 50s and early 60s, and people used to talk about the common good, right? And you never hear that anymore. It's all like, pull up the ladder. I got mine. And so one way to feel that love is to express it or to activate it by doing things that help the community, that help the poor, that you send up whatever you can to Red Cross, or you have a garage sale and you send the money to Doctors Without Borders, or you register voters, or you go to the food pantry. You just fill up a bag of food. It could be a 20-minute commitment. You fill up a bag of food with really nice groceries and a sack of Oreos for the little ones, and you drive over to the Canal District where people are pretty underserved, and you give it to people. And then, you know, you flirt with them and you look people in the eye and you say, hey, how are you? Because people aren't looking at them and saying, hey, how are you? You go to Whole Foods, and you stand in line, and the guy in front of you is very old, and he's got 30 items in his basket and coupons, right? And instead of counting his items thoughtfully and making these bad noises of sighing and whatnot, you say to him, I love your hat. Or you say to him, can I pet your dog? Is she friendly? Or you say to him, how are you doing today? And then you've brought love. And so love exists around you, and it can change the whole emotional acre that you're standing on.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us calling from the road. Tom, hi.
Hi, how are you guys? It's a great program, but I have to be the person that causes the problem. I think, to some degree, with all due respect to the author, that the concept being expressed is one which diminishes what we really originally thought about, or at least I did as a youngster growing up and having very loving parents, that love is not about the scenery on the road. It's not about whether you do some work on the side for charity. Those are all matters of respect and kindness, and there's nothing wrong with those words. But to suddenly take the word love, in my opinion, and spread it across the board like it's some magical cure, I don't buy that theory, and that's what it sounds like is being offered. I regret that I haven't read the author's book, so, you know, my comments may be inappropriate, but
Tom, I gotcha. Tom, Annie, are we diluting our concept of love if we spread it so thin, Tom worries?
I don't think you can spread love thin. It's not spreadable, and it can't be thin. It's just love. It's just what it is, and there are a lot of pieces in the book about family and our closest, most intimate friends, and that is where we find safety, and that's where we find our sense of value, and that's where, in my case, these few very best friends and my brothers are the reason I have such faith in God, is because of that love in my immediate galaxy. So I think it might be useful if you read the book, because it's I really hear what you say, but that's not what the book is like.
Tom, thanks for that call. Anne Lamott is with us. That new book is called Somehow, Thoughts on Love. Christine joins us now in Eau Claire. Christine, hi. Are you there, Christine? I think we lost Christine. We'll go instead to Chris in Cedarburg. Chris, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, you know, I kind of feel that today's youth and some people, you know, when they get married, expect their spouse to be picture perfect, or, you know, maybe look or act like they did when they first got married. And I think, as we all know, as we age, you know, you are going to lose some of that sparkle and get realistic. And, you know, it's up to you to be there for your love, you know, for your husband or wife. And be there through good times and bad, and really good times and bad, when, you know, maybe there's an illness and you know, someone who stays with you through the turmoils and, you know, the ups and downs. To me, that's, you know, true love, along with, like she was saying, the grocery store. I'm one to say, hey, can I help you, you know, take your cart back? Or, you know, you just got to express yourself and be there.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Eddie, you talk about some of the ups and downs in your own relationship. A lot of love is working through those not so perfect times.
Yeah. And, you know, just back to what the last man was saying, he said he grew up in a very, very loving family and that it was a source of safety. And I would say that 2/3 of the people that come to my talks or that read my books didn't grow up with parents that loved each other and loved each other equally and felt women were equal to men. And the people who I'm close to and the people who tend to like my work grew up with a lot of anxiety and fear. They might have looked different. They might have, like me, I looked very different. I got bullied a lot. My parents didn't like each other at all. And so I didn't get a handbook on love and what it is. I needed to find chips of tile for the mosaic that I crafted of love in its many splendored things. And a lot of us were taught, I certainly was, by, I had an English mother and a father who was the son of a Presbyterian missionary, God's frozen chosen, which I actually am now too, but they were so guarded and they were so focused on looking good and on impressing people. And my friend Duncan Trussell, the comedian, said that when you first meet him, you're meeting his bodyguard, and that we're just so, so, so protected. And so it's hard to let love get in by osmosis, that we stop being permeable at a certain age because we know it's just going to lead to hurt. And so I think a lot about a lot of this book is about the courage to be loved. The whole last chapter is based on that beautiful William Blake line of poetry that says, we are here to learn to endure the beams of love, because some of us are just great at loving everyone, loving the world. I was like a little flight attendant to my whole family when I was growing up. And but to endure the beams of love, to let people love me to within an inch of my life, well, I'll tell you, that took some work, that took practice. And every time I let it happen, it was like doing Nautilus for my soul.
And that's where we'll leave it. Thanks to Anne Lamott for joining us. Her new book is called Somehow, Thoughts on Love. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.